Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm Tom. I've got Sam with me as usual. And Sam, we're digging into another one of everybody's favorite topics this week, kind of off of some recent episode we did. We're talking about more Liara. Yay.
Yeah, just kidding. We're not done with Liara. We've got another 6 weeks. No, that's not
no, that's no more Liara, no more Liara. We just talked about corporations last week. We're talking about more corporations, but this time we're talking about the secret lore of the Garvug corporatist war. What the heck is even this?
Easy for you to say.
What even is this? Like, Sam does the notes, of course. Sam's the expert on the stuff. I'm the guy learning as we go along, and he sends me the notes, and I'm just like, what is the secret lore of the Garvug capitalists? Are you just making crap up now, or we're out of topics? We're just making things up.
I'm just straight up making this up. That's how I'm the expert. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not an expert.
He's editing all the wikis and just adding in all the content just to confirm all of the things and just make stuff up. Yeah.
The more that I like learn about Mass Effect lore from the extended mediums and replaying the games, the more I realize that I'm really not an expert at all. And I would like to just clarify for everybody that I'm just a dude who likes Mass Effect. So yeah, just because I've seen in some, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you get it in different fandoms, right? Like, for your other shows, let's this is a challenge to prove Tom wrong.
I posted recently on Twitter about how many people seem to just like thrive off of just doing the well actually posts on every video they watch on YouTube. And it's like, so half of the time they'll well actually before they even get to the part of the episode where I said that thing. And it's like, just watch the rest of the video first. Like, come on.
Yeah, actually, I've found that there's like this weird thing happening with YouTube right now and the way that bots are attacking videos. Ooh. I've noticed that if you even say the word woke in a video, you will invoke the holy wrath of the bot army to come down on your video and leave total BS comments that have nothing to do with the topic at hand. And speaking of the topic at hand, yes, we're talking about the corporatist war on Garvug. Now, this is something that I didn't really even know about until I started like looking into corporations in the lore, and then I started like really scrounging some like kind of tertiary sources of lore for Mass Effect, and I came across the Cerberus Daily News service. This was a thing that came out in, like, you know, 2010, companion to Mass Effect 2. Mm-hmm. Anyway, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is where a lot of this lore is coming from, right? And it all takes place, this corporatist war takes place around Garvug, a planet. And it involves three major corporations in their war effort on the planet. It's this very troubling example of corporate power, and it's something that we're going to be splitting into multiple episodes. So this one is going to be part one, where we are examining this corporatist violence on Garvug.
Okay, so where do we get started? Because I have not heard of this before. This is absolutely, I mean, a lot of times you bring stuff up and I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that, or this is new to me, because you play these games a lot more than I do, but how do we know about this? Like, from the games, from the books, just from like posts online? Like, where does this info come from?
That's the really interesting thing. Like, I don't think it makes even an appearance anywhere else in the lore besides the Cerberus Daily News Service. And so, you know, we learn about what's going on with Garvug through this in-universe Cerberus news. So think about that. It's in-universe, meaning everyone should take what we're about to learn here about this corporatist war with a grain of salt, because we know that Cerberus would definitely not be above censoring or manipulating the press, especially its own in-house press service.
Yeah, Cerberus News is probably about as trustworthy as some other news sources out there. But anyway, all right, so how does the war start?
So first of all, to understand this war and really why it's important, why it's tragic, we should examine the background of Garvug. Garvug is a Krogan world in the Terminus systems. The Krogan settled this planet all the way back in 354 of the current era, CE. The Council gave it to them back then because no one else wanted it, basically. It was a frozen, inhospitable wasteland of a planet, but there was a small belt of land with fertile soil for farming around the equator. Even there, it was only 5 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
And so that's, you know,
that's
still pretty cold.
That's the farmland.
That's the farmland. That's the breadbasket of this planet, 5 degrees Celsius at the equator. And there's apparently some limited but well-insulated sea creatures in parts of this planet as well. So that is what you need to know about how it became settled. Well, you fast forward, and by about 400 CE, the Krogan have all adapted to this planet, and they're having like hundreds of kids per family,
as they used to do,
as one does. and by 500 CE, so 100 years later, again, they have fished and polluted the entire planet to the point of marine ecosystem collapse. The coral reefs are dead, and of course, this means that they're going to need to find somewhere else to live. So those Krogan colonists start saying, you know, bailing and saying, you know, I'm going to a different star system. And, you know.
And that's how it goes. So the Krogan, in a, like roughly 150 years, just destroy a planet due to overpopulation. That's basically how it comes, right? Like that's how it goes. And I'm guessing the council at this point, they just chalk it up to like Krogans be Krogan. That needs to be a t-shirt, by the way. Krogans be Krogan. Krogan, the last one being K-R-O-G-I-N. Krogan. Like,
what Krogan? What would Krogan as a verb be?
Being a Krogan. Kroging. Yeah, K-R-O-G-I-N-G. And that means having lots of kids and destroying the ecosystem of the planet you're on. But like, that's probably what they thought, right? I mean, it's the council.
Right. You know, they weren't it's not like they were hard pressed to believe negative things about the Krogan to begin with.
Right.
So and to be fair, you know, Garvug didn't really have this wealth of resources to begin with, but Garvug becomes one of the sources of that stereotype within the council. The council races saw what happened on T'Chanka, you know, the nuclear war, the self-destruction that the Krogans wreaked on themselves. But then they see what happens with Garvug. And in their minds, this confirms that the Krogan cannot be trusted to not overpopulate planets.
I mean, it seems like that's their track record. Like, it would be unreasonable to expect the council not to think that if they have multiple examples of this is what happens when the Krogan are left to their own devices and worlds, right? Like, we've talked about this before with the Genophage and all of that stuff. Like, both sides have valid points, but it still doesn't make it an easy decision.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Genophage was certainly, that was certainly an inhumane and terrible decision.
Right.
However, right.
But when it was a legitimate problem they were trying to solve. They just solved it in a really, really poor way.
Right. It's not like the Krogan were not antagonistic and not aggressive. They certainly were.
Right.
But, you know, you look at Garvug and you start to see the seedlings of the xenophobia that must have been present, you know, to justify the development and usage of a genophage weapon. So,
right.
You know, that it's just, it's sad, honestly, because it's not like Garvug had a ton of resources to begin with. The council gave them Garvug as somewhat of a consolation token, and kind of like just this horrible backwater planet that the council didn't even really want anyway.
Right.
So, and it's in the dangerous terminus systems, too.
Yeah. Okay, so where do the corporations come in? I mean, we're talking between, like, what, 300 and 500 CE. This isn't a very long period of time.
Right, and you know, at that time, humanity, of course, was not yet introduced to the intergalactic community.
Right, so these are human corporations that are involved?
Right, I wanted to lay the background here for that 300 to 500 CE, just to give people an idea of what kind of planet this was, and how this planet came under Krogan colonization, and how the Council never really came to help. So now we're going to jump forward all the way to 2185. That's the year, of course, that Mass Effect 2 takes place. This planet is just as inhospitable as it was back then, but now it's also populated by Vorcha.
Oh, great. That's, you know, that's the next thing you want when you have a planet going to hell is more Vorcha moving in.
The race I once kindly described as looking like a booby trap covered in cottage cheese. Yeah. you remember, they also don't need anything more than like one piece of sackcloth, half a smoked cigarette, and a stale chunk of bread to thrive somewhere.
Yeah,
they're good to go wherever.
They're like the cockroaches of the universe, yes.
You can put them literally any. You can chop off like their legs and leave them, I don't even know, maybe in the vacuum of space. I'm just riffing here, but I feel like they could probably survive that. And then, you know, so the Vorcha are on this planet too, and the Krogans are, of course, the tons of redundant systems. You know, they don't have a problem apparently surviving after so many have left. And then we learn that these corporations from Citadel Space, not the Terminus systems, they're from Citadel Space, the corporations. These corporations have been plotting to take over. The main culprits are two companies that I'd never heard of before, named Sonax Industries and Guanghui Solutions. Sonax is a mining company, and Guanghui is what the lore calls an eco-engineering firm.
Oh, so, okay, so what do we know about eco-engineering? That sounds interesting.
A great question and way above my pay grade. I venture to guess it's a company probably aiming to study inhospitable worlds. You know, I'm just going off the name here, right? Mm-hmm. That they would be studying inhospitable worlds and then designing ways for the Milky Way races to colonize
them. Yeah, to kind of engineer the ecosystem in order for more life to be able to thrive on it more readily, that kind of thing. That makes sense.
Right. There is a third company, too. It's a pretty well-known one. It's called Binary Helix. For any Mass Effect 1 fans, you already know who I'm talking about. This is the corporation that was responsible for the Rachni breeding on Novaria at the Peak 15 facility. Saren and Benezia both had a lot of money invested in this corporation, so it's had its shady connections before. And even though Peak 15, you know, made them look pretty bad, they haven't strayed away from meddling in other affairs, so they did not learn their lesson.
Okay. All right. This sounds like it's setting up to be a wonderful thing.
Right. You've got the three corporations that are rapidly forming the Axis of Evil. And you've got these three corporations, Sonax, Guanghui, and Binary Helix. They sponsor a coup attempt to get rid of the Krogan clan in charge of Garvug. Why?
Yeah, why?
Well, the people making a deal with them, you know, that's how coup works. So the people not in power, but making the deal with them to launch this coup, have promised them, the companies, free reign over whatever projects these corporations want to conduct on Garvug.
Okay, so no boundaries. They can do anything they want.
Essentially, yeah, that they would have free reign, that they any projects they want to conduct on that planet are going to get approved. And, you know, you give these corporations an inch, they'll take a mile. So I'm not at all surprised that apparently the ruling party on Garvug was not willing to allow them in. And so here's a little bit from the Cerberus Daily News report that I mentioned. It says, eco-engineering firms like Binary Helix and Guanghui Solutions seek license to repair the balance of nature at any cost, while mining firms like Sonax Industries want access to state-protected iridium deposits. The aborted coup has turned into protracted fighting in the capital of Dazil, with the state's army slowly gaining the upper hand. As night falls and reinforcements for both sides arrive from off-planet, this is still anyone's game.
So, I mean, this is a very bold thing for corporations to do. This whole idea of, like, sending military into a situation and financing them through corporate means. And for the most part, I don't know that we've really come to that yet in our own world, but this feels very cyberpunk. This is basically the warning of the dark future. And we've talked about how Mass Effect kind of plays up against those cyberpunk kinds of ideas on occasion.
I'm not too familiar with the history in like the 15, 16, 1700s, but I feel like this is something that, if given the opportunity, private ventures, supported by like the King of Spain or the East India Company, definitely would have conducted. Right. So we don't even need to look all that far in the future, but it is very cyberpunky, right? This feels exactly like the actions the corporation Arasaka would take. It feels exactly like that.
Militech and Arasaka having conflict with each other over a location. So they send out, you know, basically people to fight each other over that location that they want rights to or whatever. It happens in the lore of cyberpunk for sure.
What strikes me is that these corporations are apparently not afraid that they could be violating any law whatsoever. That it is the Terminus systems, granted, right? But it's also a Krogan planet, so there's definitely not going to be any Citadel assistance whatsoever.
Yeah. I mean, it seems bold, but it also seems like they must believe that they can get away with it.
Yeah, and not just that, but the payoff must be worth it. They're corporations, right? So they're worried about a bottom line. And somewhere in their boardrooms, their executives have deemed this risk to be worth the cost.
Right. And I think that's something that you always have to keep in mind when it comes to corporations. When they do things that seem extreme or seem amoral or immoral or just make you wonder what they're thinking, somebody in that boardroom has determined that it's worth the risk. The benefits are worth the risk, because most of the time businesses are risk averse unless they get there's a lot of evidence that, hey, if we go in this direction, if we invest this money, if we potentially go up against the legal ramifications of this decision, then we're still going to come out better on the other side.
It also feels very much like a Cerberus move. Like, this feels very much like a Cerberus move. And we know that Cerberus has these connections to private companies. By the way, you know what the icon of Binary Helix is?
It's Binary Helix. Is it one side of a helix?
I'll tell you this. Go ahead and Google Binary Helix in Mass Effect. Uh-huh. Anyone who's listening to this, too, if you're not, you know, driving, Google Binary Helix Mass Effect. Look at the icon. It is identical to the Cerberus icon.
Oh, it's got that same kind of like a stretched out diamond shape.
Right. That icon for Binary Helix made in Mass Effect 1 before a lot of things were decided for Mass Effect 2, but probably beyond coincidence, right? That it looks so similar, and we know that Cerberus has their hand in so many different corporations. And we also know that Saren had been a really big investor in Binary Helix. Of course, by this point, when Binary Helix is involved in this coup attempt and the invasion of Garvug, you know, Saren's already dead. Yeah. So is Benezia. Yeah.
Right.
So these orders are not coming from them. They're gone. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I find it really interesting that all of these corporations, all three of them, are from Citadel space. I think that's really telling. They're operating within the galactic law when they're bound by it, but they are actively seeking opportunities to circumvent said law.
Yeah. Yep. So, all right. So it seems like we're kind of right at the beginning of the actual war here, the conflict, and we've definitely got more to cover, but we've got to go thank our patrons, and we have a planet card. It's another planet card.
We have another planet card.
Woohoo! Right. All right, so let's go thank our patrons. We'll be right back.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. Thank you so much for everybody's support. Thank you to all of our patrons. And if you would like to sign up and check out all the things you can get, like ad-free episodes and t-shirts and stickers and joining us on patron chats, like the one coming up next week on the 26th, then head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast. Go check everything out. And when you sign up, you'll get a shout out, like our Shepherd tier patrons who get shout outs every week. Ed Boy, Kira C, Lieutenant Tosino, and William, thank you so much to all of you and to all, again, 69 of our current patrons. Nice.
Nice.
Thanks for your support. That's why nobody signed up in the last few weeks, is because nobody wants to ruin that number. They're like, I'm not going to ruin that number. So if you ruin the number, we won't be mad a little bit. But then other things you can do to help us out are things like leaving reviews. You can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read out your review on a future episode of the show. We don't have any new ones this week, which means if you leave one, then you'll get read out on the next episode. You can also rate the show on Spotify and anywhere else you listen. And you can also share the show with your friends. Plus, we have a planet card this week. You mind if I read this one? I don't ever read the planet cards here. This one is Feynman. Feynman, I think, is the name of the planet. A hydrogen methane gas giant, Feynman is of far less interest to the colonists of Bekenstein than its moons. All 24 are under heavy development by three rival firms: Hoshichiri Heavy Industries, Guanghui. Is that how you say that? Because you said it earlier.
I was saying Guanghui.
Guanghui. Solutions and the Dynamis Corporation, one of these we just heard about recently. These three firms are under ironclad contract to sell their raw materials exclusively to corporations based on or orbiting around Bekenstein, a situation which has led to heavy investment on Bekenstein from manufacturing corporations looking to get a piece of the action. Feynman itself has been relatively untouched by the mining concerns, as its strong magnetosphere and great dark storm cells create a barrier to all but the newest generation of scanners. So, sounds like a heavy industry planet.
Yeah, and high risk, high reward, because it's untouched, but it's hard to get there because of these dark storm cells.
Yeah, yeah. So, very cool. Wonderful. Wonderful to have the planet cards back. It's so nice. All right, that's going to do it for the middle of this episode. Let's get back to the rest of the episode, because I want to find out what happens with the rest of this conflict. Here we go.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
Okay, so these corporations get together, they try to stage a coup. It doesn't work out? It just kind of falls apart? Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah, it does. It falls apart. The state military steps up. They're chalking up wins, right? And now it's just a disaster. So this is something that will ultimately lead to months of protracted fighting, costly losses on both sides, and quite frankly, politically embarrassing news from the war front for these corporations. It is an all-out brawl at this point. Think Bay of Pigs. But there's no nukes on the table, and okay. Instead, the invaders have committed massive armies to the fight for an entire planet. So it's quagmire is like an understatement of a term to call it that.
Giggity
to the 69 patrons we have. But, you know, we learn in a follow-up news report from the Cerberus Daily News that the day was marked by fierce fighting on the planet Garvug in the Valhallan threshold. Comm buoys aimed at the star Paz have been taken out by state starships, cutting the system off from all outside communication. So these comm buoys have been shot down by Garvug state forces, the Krogan-backed military. Why would the Krogan want all comms severed, right, if they're in a war? I think there's two reasons here. Number one, they're confident that they can win without any logistical support from off-world.
Right.
So
right.
It's still a bold move. But number two, the Krogan clan in charge, they knew that they wouldn't be getting any outside help anyway. Definitely not from the Citadel.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like they understood their station. They were like, okay, we're in this alone. We got this.
Yeah, these corporations are attacking like ultra predators in Siberia.
right. That's well, that's the other thing is happening. That they have a huge population and they're all Krogan. So you've got to be assuming that taking your military and going up against them is going to be quite an uphill battle. Like, it's not going to be
not
easy.
Just Krogan, but Vorcha too, who yeah. are like not afraid to be suicidal.
So
you've got like ultra predators and highly regenerative cottage cheese covered booby traps coming after you, and you're invading them in Siberia.
It's like Alien and Predator together fighting back against the corporations. I mean, that's basically it.
Hey, that would be dope. I would watch that movie.
That would be a cool movie. Yeah.
So yeah, obviously, you know, cutting off the communication, that's going to hurt these corporations a lot more than it's going to hurt the Krogan, because they are relying on all the millions, billions, maybe even trillions of credits that are flowing through these corporations from Citadel space into the Terminus systems. And if they can cut off the communications between the corporation's military on the front line and the corporation's power structure back home, they might have a really good shot at winning this.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so where does it go from here?
So we learn also that the Intergalactic Press gets journalists in here. They from the news report, it says they got a news ship through the relay bringing video from the planet's capital, Dazeel. Corporate forces fought for air and space supremacy, shooting down at least two ships, but losing five of their own. That's a terrible exchange, by the way.
right.
This has been the worst trade deal in the history of trade deals.
Oh, jeez.
Perhaps ever. Artillery pounded power stations and airfields from outside the capital, paving the way for what will no doubt be a push into the streets. Quote, "This is going to get worse before it gets better," said a Guanghui armored unit commander. "They don't know who they're dealing with."
Cool. All right.
Sounds like Arasaka.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely some cyberpunk here with corporations militarized in order to try to get what they want. But it still seems like a bad trade. It still sounds like the corporations are kind of at the losing end of this conflict.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, at this point, you've already had Krogan state forces successfully sever comms, or at least some of the comms, between the local corporate military forces and their headquarters. And now you also have, like, corporate forces, you know, raising the pike above their heads like the Sand People from Star Wars.
right?
And yeah. They're like, well, we took out, you know, two of their ships. Well, yeah, but you lost five. And
right.
Granted, the corporations can replace those five a lot easier than the Krogan can, I'm sure. But it's a war of attrition. I think that's basically what this news report is showing. Mm-hmm. It's a war of attrition, not to mention the fact that I think it's the corporations who don't really know who they're dealing with here, right? That the Guanghui armored unit commander saying, oh, they don't know who they're dealing with. That is a good sense of the supremacy mindset that they're bringing into this.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly doubt that they have ever faced an entire planet of Krogan where the Krogan have the advantage of defending known terrain. Come on, man. Get real.
Yeah, and the terrain is difficult, too. This is like you're on an ice ball. This place is a frozen, difficult place to be in, and the Krogan are already thriving there. So if you're humans on the ground, that sucks. Like, just the amount, the support they would need to make sure they can keep fighting in that situation?
It's a poor plan, but yeah, it does seem like a huge money sink, doesn't it? So again, you have to think, what is so valuable on this planet that they are willing to just sink this much time, effort, lives, and money in? But I think that this, you know, this news report and the quote, they do an excellent job of showing the utter lack of humanity on the part of some of these corporations.
On the part of these human corporations who have a lack of humanity.
On these human corporations.
Yeah.
Well, actually, to be fair, we know that Guanghui Solutions is certainly a human corporation because that's Chinese. But we don't know anything about Sonax Industries or I'm blanking on the name of the third one.
Yeah.
Binary Helix.
Right.
I don't know if we know if either one of those are human-based. However, for lack thereof a better term, not showing much humanity. They're using artillery to absolutely pound these power stations and airfields into submission. They are going to push troops directly into the streets and urban centers. You know, this is not... And they're doing all of this. I want to make a point of this, that they are not fighting for anything more than profit at this point, and that they're invading an alien world shamelessly without even so much as what's called a casus belli, if you know what that is.
Right, right, right. The right to claim something. It's one of those old terms from like the time of kings and queens where you would say, oh, I have cause to claim that throne over there as mine because I'm the fourth cousin twice removed and, you know, or whatever reason they can.
Right. Or even like, if for those of you who play Civilization, right, they still use this term in that game and you can make one that says, oh, I'm going to liberate this area that was recently conquered and I'm going to give them back control, their people back control of their own empire. Or you can say this is a war of retribution, or you know what I mean? There's no good reason, and they're not even pretending to have a good reason.
Which I'm pretty sure casus belli means good reason. It means reason good.
I think it does.
I think it actually does mean that.
Beautiful reason. Yeah.
Right. Like, yeah, good or beautiful reason. Because Latin.
I mean, this is truly emboldened shithead behavior, is what it is.
Yeah.
And I'd like to ask how anyone at all along.
Oh no, it's war. It's belli for war. It's not bell like beautiful or good. It's belli as in war. So a reason for war, an act of war.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we're close.
But sort of. You know, I'd like to ask how anyone went along with this, but we are learning in our own world that for many people, morals have a price.
Yeah. Okay. So. We know there's no like police force or military coming from off planet to help protect the Krogan. Is there any other blowback for these corporations based on, we know they're kind of pushing the boundaries of the law. Does anybody at the Citadel care? Like, is there anything else going on outside of what's happening on the planet? Uh-oh, you're muted.
That might help if I unmute my board. Yeah. I'm sure they'd get a swift kick in the rear if they tried this in Citadel space, but it's outside Citadel space. So technically, I don't think it is against the law because there is no law. So, but that doesn't stop the fact that, you know, these consumers in Citadel space are learning about some of the atrocities of this war, because even with a comms blackout and a blockade, journalists still got in there. They still traveled in and they've been broadcasting videos to the extranet. And spoiler alert, citizens in Citadel space are pissed. We learn in another Cerberus Daily News entry that there are, in fact, protests going on back on the home front. And here's some of what that says. It says, peace activists demonstrated today at the headquarters of Binary Helix, Guanghui Solutions, and Sonax Industries, the three companies forming the backbone of the corporate army in Garvuk, demanding that the corporations lift their siege on the planetary capital Dazil. The protesters burned corporate logos in effigy and called for a galactic boycott of all three companies' products.
Okay, so there is some social pushback. The fact that they're not breaking the law still doesn't mean that people who are learning this news aren't upset by it and going, okay, well, this is terrible. They shouldn't be doing this. There's still moral ramifications, right?
Sure, yeah. And the consumers are trying to protest with their wallet, with the boycotts. Right. I'm not sure how effective those are, but you know what? This is a perfect mirror of a lot of anti-war protests that we see in our own world. Namely, this mimics a lot of what we've seen with the Israel-Hamas war that's going on in Gaza right now. And it's not uncommon for peaceful, prosperous countries that have citizens who do not want war.
Right. Yeah.
If that
yeah.
makes sense.
Right, right. You have to be in a certain state of mind to feel like war as just kind of a commoner in a country. The idea that the public gets behind the war is usually because the public feels like they have more to gain than they do to lose. So the public has to already be in a difficult situation. But people who have prosperous lives who just want to take care of their families and do their jobs are generally against war. That's usually generally how it works.
Unless they have been lied to.
Right. Unless they've been lied to, and then they believe they have more to gain. They believe their lives are worse than they actually are. Those kinds of things, right? But that takes a lot of propaganda in order to motivate people to that extreme.
It does. And, you know, our listeners might be wondering, how does this relate to the Citadel space? Well, it's 2185, right? The Citadel has survived, you know, the attack on Sovereign, but the Reapers aren't quite there yet. And the Citadel has, you know, told its people that there is no such thing as the Reaper threat. So, you know, there was an attack on the Citadel, but far outside of the Citadel, everything's very peaceful still. And people are still prosperous. Many people in power still getting all of their needs met. You know what I mean? So it's not surprising to me that you'd have at least a decent chunk of the population who has their needs met. They're not afraid of anything. They're not afraid of outsiders or the Reapers or anything like that. They haven't been lied to through Cerberus, right? Cerberus doesn't have their ear like it does in some human colonies come Mass Effect 3. Yeah. And of course, they don't take kindly to the fact that this is kind of the corporations punching down, right?
Yeah.
The Krogan have endured the Genophage at this point. They don't have many worlds to begin with. And now you just have kind of a backwater in the Terminus systems where these big, powerful corporations are moving in. And of course, you know, the Krogan don't really care very much one way or another whether they're getting any support from these protesters.
Or they may not even know it. I mean, there's a blackout on their side, right? Like they may not even be aware. But even then, they're still embroiled in this war. And to them, that doesn't matter so much as being able to just defeat their enemies and fend the, you know, secure their own safety.
You know, they've already committed at this point that they're going to be at war until the very bitter end. We know this from a follow-up Cerberus News, Daily News article that says, meanwhile, Krogan have been reacting to the war with amusement. Quote, the corporations will win the war, no doubt, said Erdnot Galim, clan media director on Tuchanka. Quote, but are they dumb enough to expect peace ever again?
Like, they might take the planet, but we will destroy them completely.
Yeah, like, I hope that they understand that they have just invoked a forever war with an ultra predator race.
Right. Like, this is really dumb. They might win the battle, but they're not going to win the war. So, I mean, it sounds like there's a decent amount of pushback happening across not just the threats from the Krogan, but like protesters and things like that. This stuff seems to be like in the headlines on the extranet, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, here's three very wealthy corporations objectively taking advantage of a poor Krogan planet with little resources to fight back. They're throwing their weight around without so much even as a false premise, like we said. And interestingly, even though these Cerberus Daily News updates were written 14 years ago, some of the media reaction that it describes and the divisiveness that this war causes, it rings so true to today. Listen to this update from April 2010. That's when this was sent out on the Cerberus Daily News service, the companion app. It says, Volus comedian Suranan sparked the entertainment feud of the week when her comments about the war on Garvug caught the ire of Sit Space Daily opinionator Max Power. You want to take over the rest?
I love that they're saying Volus comedian. I want to see a Volus comedian. The scampy humorist said that conquering a Krogan and Vorcha world is like buying a beehive with a sign reading pre-shaken and saying, but darling, it's 20% off. Power slammed her, saying the Krogan on Garvug have been victims since the planet's inception, and mocking their pain is tasteless. Non shot back. If Power doesn't understand that I was mocking the corporate monkeys who made the decision to invade, I suggest he start stretching and get a flashlight so he can try to find where his head is lodged. Supporters of Non have taken up the fight, mailing Power over 1,500 flashlights to date.
Wow.
That's great. This does sound like something that would happen today. This, I mean, But, you know, as extreme as things are today, in the summer of 2024, with all the things that are going on in our country, being Americans and the rest of the world in very specific places, ultimately, people are people. These are the things that have been happening and just have been like, things aren't really that different. I mean, they're a little bit more extreme now than they were 14 years ago. But the we know how people respond to these kinds of things. And they did 14 years ago as well. Right.
Yeah, I agree and I disagree. So I agree that people are people and some things about human nature will never change. War never changes, for example. No.
Right.
But, you know, the whole thing with Sur Anan invoking the wrath of all of her followers, that I feel like is a very big product of social media post 2010.
Yes. Yeah. That wouldn't have been possible 20 years ago. That,
no.
Like, and the closest thing would have been racking the wrath of your fan base, but it's not the same thing without social media and an internet or extranet or whatever happens to be
right.
The way that you're
keeping people engaged in the fight 24/7. You know, we weren't at each other's throats so much, and I don't think, and social media reactions didn't really dominate the news cycle like they did in 2010. Yeah. So I feel like this is somewhat prescient of the writers to write this. You know, we still had these spats between television personalities and talk show hosts, but the animus, you know, the level right. of hatred and basic disagreement about human rights, that feels really similar to today.
Just the levels of propaganda and even just the use of bots on the internet, which are posting the most ridiculous stuff in order to make that stuff feel more normalized. All of that has happened in extreme amounts in the last decade. So yeah, in that way, it is kind of prescient.
Yeah, you know, and 1,500 flashlights. I mean, I guess it could have been a little bit more hostile. So they're just flashlights, you know, telling him to get his head out of his rear. But just to show that this war is having a tangible impact on the extranet, like across the Citadel space.
Right. Okay. So what's going on with the war front at this point? I'm guessing that the corporations just keep on pouring more into the fight, even though they're losing more in the battle, they probably just keep on sending more troops in, right?
Yeah, the unstoppable war machine. They start chalking up wins. And I mean, for all intents and purposes, the Krogan State military is outgunned, they're outnumbered, so they resort to a guerrilla warfare. And the corporations, they start flexing their might. You know, the war looks like it could be almost over when the Corpos pin down the Krogan's state leadership in this well-known fortress. This next Cerberus Daily News update says, corporate forces on Garvug have won a major victory tonight. Sonax infantry units surrounded the Clan Hylot ancestral fortress and pounded it with rocket-propelled grenades, singularity projectors, and mass accelerator fire. In a bloody invasion that yielded 12 casualties, troops stormed the doors and took the fortress, destroying the Krogan resistance and replacing the clan flag with the Sonax Industries logo.
Oh, wow, 12 casualties. I expect the number to be much higher than that. But
well, I think that was their weird use of the word invasion. I think that they were trying to describe just storming through the doors of the fortress.
Like, that's where the 12 people died as opposed to outside of the rest of the conflict.
I believe so.
So, yeah. Okay, so, I mean, their leader is definitely dead then, right?
Not definitely. It turns out that Hylot Rund may have not even been there. That's the leader's name. So the Krogan State military is winning the game on intelligence, apparently, because he wasn't even in the ancestral fortress at the time that they attacked. And, of course, winning a game on intelligence, it's always hard for an invading force to win that when they don't know the political and physical terrain that they're getting into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is harder for the attacker, for sure.
Yeah. Another update says there's no word yet if clan head Hylot Rund was inside the building during the attack. Elsewhere in the city, troops had to pick their way through booby-trapped power stations, hospitals, and water purification facilities. It's not over yet, said one young special forces officer who declined to be named. They haven't even begun to fight.
They haven't even begun.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. So, yeah, you know, it's describing these booby-trapped like critical infrastructure buildings, and we're now getting into a much different kind of fight than an organized state military versus another organized military. Now it looks like the Krogan state forces are fully adopting asymmetric warfare, aka guerrilla warfare, you know, against an occupying force. It's sporadic, it's hit and run, it's designed to make it a living hell for our occupiers, and oftentimes it works.
Well, it makes sense, because the one thing that the corporations care about is their profits. So if they make the war protracted and really, really expensive for them, then that's a possible chance to actually win. You make it to the point where they no longer think it's worth the costs, and then they back up.
Exactly. Yeah. Just make it such a fucking headache that they're like, you know what? I'm out. And that's actually what the Americans did to partly win the war against the British for our independence.
Yeah, just throw all the tea in the bay. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, they saw the tea and they were like, no,
more tea.
No, and then they left. That is too much tea in the bay. We must leave now.
Oh, boy, what are we going to do to fuck up our teeth now?
Oh, no. Oh, no. We just lost all of our listeners in the UK. Oh,
oh, whatever. They can make fun of our public education system. It'll all even out.
Oh, there is definitely way more for them to make fun of with us than us of them right now. But
right. Certainly. You know, the occupying force gets tired of fighting what's called an enemy with no face. These guerrilla forces often, they're not wearing badges, they're not wearing uniforms, so it's hard to tell who is who. But here's the thing, that assumes the corporations give a shit about who's who.
Yeah, yeah.
And these are Krogan and Vorcha that they're fighting. Any single one of them could be a soldier or ready and willing to fight at any given moment. And we aren't totally sure if these corporations care to avoid civilian casualties in any capacity.
Well, here's the other thing. Knowing the Krogan and the Vorcha, I bet a lot of them would say things like, none of us are civilians. We're all in the fight. Right? Like,
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Male, female, children, like both of those races are very, very like conflict ready, I guess is the way you could say it. And so, yeah, they're protecting their homes. And you know what? Give the kids guns. Let's go. I wouldn't be surprised.
I wouldn't. And it's also like an existential war that's going on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it is total war.
Right. Right.
At
which
this point.
Which, again, is historically like supported. Like there are definitely conflicts in history where the people who were defending their homelands, the women fought in old ancient times, and even the children sometimes would fight. And like that is a thing that human beings have done. So I wouldn't doubt the Krogan or the Vorcha would be down for that.
No, and this, so basically these corporations are embroiling themselves into a very, very long, protracted, costly engagement from their perspective. And on the other perspective, the Krogans are fighting for survival on Garvog, knowing fully well that they're not going to be getting any help. So the morale, and their leader escaped being killed. Right. So the morale has to be high there in some regards. They're clearly winning the intelligence game, which, by the way, if you're losing the intelligence game against Krogan and Vorcha.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Hire a new intelligence director.
Right. The Krogan and Vorcha are very good at certain things, but I don't know that intelligence is one of the things at the top of that list.
No, that's their dump stat for sure.
That's their dump stat. Yeah. So, all right. So that wraps up the first episode about this, but there's definitely more stuff to talk about, so we're gonna have to dig into this in the future.
So
this will be fun. We'll get back to this in a future episode. Next week we've got our patron episode, so if you'd like to join us, there's still time to sign up. And of course the patrons all share ideas, they all vote on what we're going to be talking about every month, so you're welcome to join us and determine what the topic will be. And until then, have a wonderful week. But Sam's got some stuff going on, I know, that you should probably tune into this week. What do you got?
Yeah, so I am continuing my personal, you know, headcanon playthrough of Mass Effect 3 with a lot of mods. By the way, been playing, and just last time I did the Duchanka, you know, we had to say goodbye to Morden, very painful.
Yeah.
But then one of my mods kicked in, and it was the Dreams Remade mod, where it replaces and revamps the the PTSD like dream sequence that Shepard has after some of these very pivotal chapters in the game. Anyway, it's extremely well done. Morden appeared in the dream. It's very sad. Anyway, if you want to see any of that, you know, I'm streaming every Saturday on Twitch at N7 The Legend. I will probably be taking the end of July off, the last weekend in July, because my 30th birthday is coming up.
Happy birthday.
So, thank you. So, yeah. And I'm also streaming when I can during the middle of the week with some Star Wars Jedi Survivor. I was streaming a little bit of that.
Yeah.
As well as Starfield and Fallout, rotating between those three, you know, when I can. But over the next 2 weeks, it's going to be a little hectic for me. My fiance and I just secured a townhome.
Nice.
Much more space.
Yeah.
Much more space. Beautiful neighborhood. We'll be moving here soon. So that's what I got going
on. Sounds like you're excited. That's awesome. Yeah. Go check out the streams. That sounds like a really cool mod, by the way. And then I've got stuff. If you want to check out the rest of my shows, robotsradio.net for my shows and all the other shows on the network. I also work with new people. So we've got some new shows joining the network recently that have signed up and joined on. So I'm excited about that. And I've also been streaming some games. I've been playing in the afternoon sometimes. I've been playing ESO or Fallout 76 or even Lord of the Rings Online, which is ancient and wonderful in its ancientness, and trying out some other things as well. So come join me on that stuff, Robots Radio on Twitch, and we'll have a wonderful conversation next week with our patrons. I hope you tune in for that. And until then, stay safe out there. And, you know, if a corporation decides to come take your home, then I don't know, make sure you get some Krogan and some Vorcha with you to help fight back, because that sounds like a good plan so far.
That does sound like a solid plan.
Yeah. All right. Have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.